This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Friday. Good to be with you today. Matt, Dan here. Hello, Dan. How are you?
Great.
Good. A lot to get to today. Representative Rick Hansen is going to be Democrat of the day. 52A, we'll talk to him. He's got some nice endorsements there. We've actually talked to him a lot over the last year or so in the Environmental Committee, and we'll talk about some of the things there and what he wants to try to accomplish this upcoming year. Also, do want to mention, we got from Axios Twin Cities, Tori Van Oot is going to join us talking to Brett here coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, so make sure you stick around for that. Dan, you work in theater. You've done a lot of stuff with the theater.
Oh, yes.
You know, when you've done this. Had you ever had a chance to meet or get in at all?
Nope, unfortunately not. Just followed his career in Minnesota before he broke it big.
Yeah, he was kind of beloved here, and then he local kid makes it good, that sort of thing. I remember I heard that there was indeed that he had actually, that the cancer was getting pretty bad. This was about a week ago, so I think that was kind of when this happened. I guess I was not surprised as I heard the cancer is there. But Louis Anderson, a native of St. Paul who lived in Las Vegas, had died. He was 68. The comedian, Emmy winner, and game show host died in a Vegas hospital where he was admitted earlier this week for blood cancer treatment. Anderson was battling a diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, a common type of non-Hodgkin lymphoma. Anderson's comedy career spanned decades, earning him a place on Comedy Central's list of the 100 greatest stand-up comedians of all time. He performed countless stand-up shows across the world, starred in TV shows, movies, appeared in late-night talk shows, and was also a best-selling author. He grew up in Minnesota as one of 11 kids. He won first place in a 1981 Midwest Comedy Competition, which helped kickstart his comedy career. He made his first national TV debut a few years later on Carson, and he had performed on The Tonight Show in 1984. His best known for his roles as Christine Baskets in Baskets, which he won an Emmy for in 2016. He also hosted The Family Feud from 1992 to 2002. His filmography is long, including voiced and animated versions of himself on TV, show Life with Louie, for which he won two Emmy Awards. He played Maurice in the 1988 film Coming to America and the 2021 remake Coming to America, with the number two as opposed to T.O. But he passed away there. Of course, this on the heels of Meatloaf,
yes,
passing away, who, I know people like to point to Rocky Horror Picture Show. Trust me, I was at the Uptown Theater many a night, mm-hmm, on Friday and Saturday nights watching that. Bat Out of Hell is that album. It's kind of, that's one of those, he had some good stuff. As a matter of fact, he had a pretty good album in the 80s, but nothing. I mean, that's like, your apex top. I mean, that's top 25, maybe top 50 albums of all time. And he just caught fire with that one.
Well, he was always playing Eddie, though, the guy on the motorcycle.
Oh, yeah, he did.
He just, his songwriter, Steinman, just kind of, expanded that whole concept.
Well, it was it's like Ryan Reynolds in Deadpool. I mean, every character he does Deadpool now, so it's that sort of thing. Two very tragic losses. I very briefly met Louis Anderson years ago. I was doing some comedy improv in town and was at an event, and he was there, and I said hello. And very nice guy. I mean, very brief. I'm not, it wasn't like we had, hours long conversation. Very brief, but very, very nice, very warm, very cordial.
Yes, and that's where he sprang from the Twin Cities, comic community.
Yeah, you did that.
The different open mics and everything.
Yeah, I can't remember what the event was we were at. It wasn't like a convention or anything like that, but he was there. I wonder if it was an event that the comedy group was playing, but we, that was just, it's a loss. I mean, a very big loss. And I mean, and 68 is, that seems quite young if you ask me. I mean, it just, it does, it's, you know, I mean, and I'm 53 right now, so I guess, you know, as I get older, it does seem a little, I'm getting closer to that. 74 for Meatloaf. He was 74 years old. I don't believe the cause of death has been confirmed. I saw someone that said it was COVID, but that's and then I couldn't find that. They said it was. So I don't know. And it was a news source, but then they either retracted it or something of that nature. I don't know. They're not saying. I mean, 74. I mean, I'm not sure if he had any health issues. I mean, I don't think there was anything in the media that, you know, he was dealing with anything on that level. So we'll obviously find out. I mean, he brought the rock opera. He brought that kind of, he took a Broadway song, mm-hmm. and he turned it into a rock song and made it playable on radio, which might not mm-hmm. seem like, oh, well, it's a big deal. No. No one was about to grab like Rush's 2112 and play that on a top 40 station. No one played that. But all of a sudden, they were playing, what is it, a 5-minute long song, Dashboard Lights?
Yes, it's Paradise by the Dashboard Lights.
That's like a 5.5-minute long song. I mean, that was completely out of context for pop radio. They didn't play that, but that was a constant one. I mean, even into the 80s when I was in high school, you know, the old WLOL and KDWB, they used to play that all the time. Mm-hmm. So, he really did do something magnificent there. And the artist today, I was like, who is it? Who am I thinking of? My song's Know What You Did Last Summer. Oh, God, the artist that's like this. There's a lot of artists today that have kind of figured out, you can kind of do a Broadway type of singer. You can kind of do a Broadway type of singer with a heavy guitar, and it sells. It sells pretty good. Let's see here. Let me see if I can figure out the artist I'm thinking about. Pardon me while I shuffle through my briefs. I'm not going to be able to find it here. Anyway, but yeah, it's Fall Out Boy. Thanks for the memories. Fall Out Boy. I mean, if you listen to some of these guys, that they're some of their songs. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, in the same sense is that this is one of the reasons why I think Nirvana was truly genius. They understood grunge was basically a pop song with an incredibly heavy guitar on it, and they paved the road with that, and they made some great music and very likable music. Same thing with him, and his will live forever. I mean, Paradise by the Dashboard Lights will live forever.
Well, it just describes the human condition. You know, I'll do anything for love, but I won't do that.
He did. He understood. He probably could have had a great career as a couples counselor, because he kind of did figure a lot of that stuff out there. Sad. And of course, it's, you know, it didn't take long for the social media world's like, who's the third person that's going to die today? Okay. Yes, because let's go talk to the witch and see who's going to go, because that's what they do. They die in threes. Look out, black cat. Yeah, come on, please. Please. It takes the loss of two very big talents. And by the way, did you ever watch Baskets?
No, unfortunately.
Oh, my God, was that funny. Oh, God, was that a good show. That was a great show. He had his shtick, and he had a very unique style to him. Cancer, I will not shed a tear when cancer, they say goodbye to cancer. That's for sure. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We tell you what, let's get into the Minnesota coronavirus update. I got a lot to get to here. And then, like I said, Democrat of the day coming up here at the bottom of the hour is Rick Hansen, the representative from 52A. We'll talk to him coming up in just a moment here. Friday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 11,828 newly reported cases, 36 newly reported deaths. The state's COVID-19 death toll now is 11,151. Now, the 11,828 new cases is not, lately it's not an extraordinary number. It's kind of where we've been, the 10,000 to 12,000 range for the last few weeks. But there was this note that they put out today. Today's update includes case data that was reported in the 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Thursday. But due to a huge number of new cases being processed daily, the system has been overloaded and there are approximately 46,000 positive tests from the past 10 days waiting to be reviewed. Those cases will be added to the daily cases in due time. So I guess what they're really saying is, you know, and they'll be added in here, but right now, as of right now, the updated total should be somewhere in the area of 57,000 new cases. Yikes. Daily cases reported figure has been undercount of actual cases on this. I know that there has been a lot of a test being processed. And you only, you know, and this is not about the testing and the testing agencies. They're overwhelmed. I talked about this, I think it was right before I had my hip replacement surgery in October. I called up the same testing spot I went to recently with my COVID diagnosis. And by the way, Dan, don't worry. I don't have COVID anymore. I'm good. All right. You're fine. COVID's, Dan's eyes got real big there. Yeah. I need to stop licking the producer whenever I come in the studio. My bad. I should have given the heads up on the COVID. Anyway, now I had COVID. I tested negative on Monday. I've been doing okay since. But when I went to this testing place in October, right before the hip replacement surgery, there's maybe like seven cars in the total, and they had like 20 parking spots allotted for testing. There's like seven cars. So less than half the slots were available. And I was able to get an appointment that day. I mean, we called up and or went to their website, actually, is how you signed up there. Went to their website. And you just went and checked, and it's like, oh, yeah, you got an appointment. You can go in there at 2:45 this afternoon. Great, I'll go in there at 2:45. Now, if I want to get an appointment, it's about 3 to 4 days out. And when you go to the parking lot, you're having to wait for a car to leave before you can pull into a slot. That's how busy it is. So the testing sites are far more overwhelmed than they have been. It is definitely something where there has been a tax on the system here. And so I'm not surprised here in regards to the backlog, if you really want to know the truth. And Omicron is nasty. Omicron is nasty. It's not as vicious as Delta, although you can still die from Omicron. You can die from Omicron. It doesn't seem to be as lethal or as ICU room inducing as Delta, but Omicron is definitely far more transmissible. Since December 30th, the Minnesota Department of Health has received more than 212 positive cases that undergo processing to confirm the positive test. More than 46,000 are yet to be processed in the event there are likely to And in the event that they are likely are confirmed, will be added to the daily case count in due time. So it's basically since, you know, end of December that the caseloads have just been so much that they overwhelm the system. On Wednesday, the Mayo Clinic held a press briefing in which it said it expects the reported cases to remain high before peaking as soon as next week. However, because reported cases lag what is happening in real time, they're saying that there is a chance Omicron may have already peaked in Minnesota. I think it's actually, from looking at various numbers, they're saying it might be even this weekend it peaks, but we don't know yet. And once again, a lot of that comes down to, are you wearing a mask? Are you being careful? Minnesota's test positivity rate on the seven-day rolling average through January 10th was 23.7%, which is another record high in Minnesota. Anything over 10% puts Minnesota on the high-risk threshold for the transmission of the coronavirus. Through January 19th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota 1,571, down from 1,629 reported on January 19th. Now, this is another side note which I have been interested in regards to COVID and the Omicron variant, particularly in the current surge that we're in. In the last 3 weeks or so, there seems to be a lot of wide-ranging variants. And so what you get is, you'll get some days where the numbers drop dramatically, like today. I mean, I think we are down, 29 plus another 29, so what, 58 cases. You know, there are 58 less people in the hospital today than there were yesterday. But we've also had days where 70 people have gone into the hospital in one day. So there seems to be a wave pattern going on right now with admissions to hospitals, which is a little concerning. Of those hospitalized, 241 people are in intensive care. That's down from 247. And 1,330 in non-ICU care. That's down from 1,382. That's actually where you see the substantial amount of drop, which is a good sign, too, because ICU numbers have been dropping for a while now, consistently a few every day. But the non-ICU numbers have not been. But now this is a pretty 52-case drop in one day. That's a pretty good number. The latest hospital capacity data shows there are 34 staffed adult ICU beds in the state. That's up from 31 on January 19th. 17 ICU pediatric beds available, which is up from 15 on January 19th. As of January 18th, the state reported that 3,813,784 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,573,445 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered 1,952,260 third dose booster shots. The total number of cases in the state of Minnesota of coronavirus, 1,216,734. Once again, as they're talking about this wave and when it's going to peak here in Minnesota, I want to be very clear and remind everyone that wave is going to is not a signifying, oh, well, I don't need to wear a mask anymore. I don't need. No. The reason why, when we talked yesterday to Dr. Eastman, he joined us to talk about his models that were coming on out. One of the things he commented is it seems a lot of people are, more people are wearing masks again, which is good. Which is good. The question I have is that if it doesn't continue, will this kind of plateau out and will stay high with Omicron well into February? Hopefully not. Hopefully not. Needless to say, get vaccinated, wear a mask, socially distance, because one more time, this time with feeling, I don't want you dead, I don't want you sick, and I don't want you bankrupt for the rest of your life. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break, come on back, more Minnesota Coronavirus Update when we return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, one other thing here, Dan, we've gotten is this has been old photos week here of Matt. And yesterday I put out the hot tamale picture I took back myself back in like 1991, all aberrific. It was, and not only a lot of hair on top, a lot of hair everywhere. There was. It was a beastie little thing. I was going through the old photos and I found a photo. And I don't want them to see it. I don't want them to see it. So I'm going to just show you kind of, I mean, very Rick Astley, isn't that? That is a disturbing, that is a disturbing image of me from, I'm guessing, 1990. The good news is I have a photo that shows that I actually did fix myself at some point here. I'll show you that as well. But, yeah, we're going to do that. And then I think I'll be the Friday music at the end of the day here will be the there will be a little bit of Rick Astley here to go along with that photo there. So no peeking. You can't see those until a little bit later on. I'll show them up with the camera. If you want to watch the radio, it's radio for your eyes. You just have to go to the Facebook page, am950radio.com or Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show. We are broadcasting the show live for some reason. But you can watch it and I will show you these photos. Bon appetit. I hope you haven't been, I hope you didn't have a big lunch. I hope you haven't had dinner yet. So there you go. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Also in the news, coronavirus news today, a group of businesses have sued the city of Minneapolis and Mayor Jacob Frey over the new rules that patrons must show proof of vaccination or a negative COVID test to enter restaurants, bars, and other venues. The owners of the establishments, Smack Shack, Gay 90s, Sneaky Pete's, Wild Greg's Saloon, Urban Forage, Jimmy John's, and Bunker's Music Bar and Grill, filed a lawsuit late Thursday in Hennepin County District Court. They want a judge on an emergency basis to stop the city from enforcing the new requirement. Minneapolis vaccine mandate went into effect on Wednesday, 1 week after Frey and St. Paul Mayor Melvin Carter jointly announced that the cities would institute a vaccine or test mandate to help curb the continued spread of the virus. Patrons must provide either a proof of vaccination or proof of negative COVID test taken under medical supervision within the last 72 hours. The plaintiffs say those requirements pose significant challenges and contradict with guidance and recommendations from the state, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and medical experts across the country, all of which adamantly promote and encourage at-home testing. Well, I don't think what they're saying is that when the pandemic got worse, that you should only rely on that. And the point of why the city is doing this has far more to do with wanting to make sure the people that are going into the business aren't borrowing someone else's test and showing it at the door and acting like, see, I'm fine, even though they're unvaccinated and might actually have COVID. So, and by the way, can I make this point too? This rule is to protect your businesses as well. We talked about Carhartt, the company out of Michigan that makes the clothes. And they were saying that they didn't care if the Supreme Court overruled this. They were going to have a mandate for their employees to actually be vaccinated. Because the guy said it's smart business. You do not want to lose half your staff to an outbreak when you can prevent that. Well, I mean, I understand you. I mean, when I look at businesses like this, the part of me that I can't help but feeling is that the businesses look at their employees as nothing more than napkins or forks or straws. They're just a commodity that, you know, sure, a bunch of them get sick. Who cares? Because that's kind of the mentality I've got towards this. And I also want to say the requirements pose significant challenges and contradict with guidance and recommendations from the state. It's inconvenient. So once again, here we are with another case where, as a society, we have determined that inconvenience is a far bigger sin than needless suffering. That trying to stop people from getting sick and, God forbid, dying. Hey, a few people are going to die. I want my 2-for-1 jalapeno popper platter. I don't care. Selfishness. Selfishness, mild inconvenience, or even major inconvenience has become a far bigger important issue than trying to stop needless suffering. And by the way, if you're looking at me as like, look at the liberal. Yeah, I'm a Christian too. Check out the Bible. I'm on the side of the old Jesus, okay? I'm just going to let you know, right-wing Christians that are all upset. Seriously, do you think Jesus would say, wait, whoa, 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 testing at the door? Wow, that's wildly inconvenient. I'm okay with needless suffering now. No, he would not. Let's just be honest. So, but this is where our society is, because we have a society that's based on selfishness than anything else. The purpose of the mandate is to attempt to prod the general public to get vaccinated, the plaintiff said. Not necessarily. They don't have to get vaccinated, and they don't have to go out for dinner. Those are the consequences. We've talked about this. Personal responsibility. You don't want to get vaccinated, that's fine. But then you have consequences for that decision. And you know those consequences. You want the best of both worlds in your own stupid, twisted mind, where you're unvaccinated, but you can go on out and get anyone sick because you just don't care. No one has to go to a restaurant or bar. There is nothing in the Constitution that says you have to keep the Chili's open. No. The Chili's open for an unvaccinated person. Fry, who announced the measure a week after reinstating indoor mask mandates, has argued the aggressive steps to require vaccines in indoor spaces is a critical next step to avoid closures. The city's community transmission rate exceeds 1,300 cases per 100,000 individuals, putting the city in the high-risk area category. But they don't care. This is just brash selfishness. We don't care. Sicken them all up. Keep my rest. Don't you dare inconvenience me. God, just as annoying. Their lawyer is saying that he didn't follow legislative process. Said the mandate puts an unfair burden on business owners who've already been hit hard financially in the COVID-19 pandemic. You see, it's like I said, it's like, so if your entire staff gets sick, that's not a burden? Or is that just a bunch of straws got sick, or a bunch of spoons got sick, or a bunch of napkins got sick? Because you don't really give a rat's caboose about your employees. No, there is nothing here to like. Let's make sure we're clear on that. There is nothing here to like. But we used to, as a society, say, you know what? Mild inconvenience is not a bigger priority than stopping needless suffering and even deaths. And today, the mentality is, screw them, get them sick, let a few of them die. I got to get my family fun meal at the restaurant. And I'm not going to get vaccinated. God, I can't wait for the age of selfishness. I have a hard time wondering how the age of selfishness is going to end. I don't think it's going to be good. But I will enjoy it greatly if I am, God willing, still around to see the end of this godforsaken age. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. When we come on back, Representative Rick Hansen is Democrat of the day. We'll chat with him. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Our Democrat of the day is a familiar name here. We've had him on the air with us numerous times. Representative Rick Hansen represents 52A. He is also the House Chair for the Environment and Natural Resources Finance and Policy Committee. He is kind enough to join us today to talk about the last year, this upcoming year, and his reelection campaign. Representative Hansen, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Glad to be here, Matt.
You're out on the farm right now, right?
I'm at my farm. The wind's blowing and it's still cold. I'm in Fillmore County right near the Iowa border, so I hope I'm coming in clear.
You're coming in fine, and the reason I want to mention this is that your photos that you post up on your Twitter feed are phenomenal. They're absolutely beautiful photos that you take down on the farm, and I want to actually, just for this reason alone, you should be following Representative Rick Hansen on Twitter, Rep Rick Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N, and you're just, you got a lovely piece of land down there.
It is. It's a beautiful country. A lot of folks don't know this existence southeast Minnesota. So I'd encourage them to visit. And even if you don't like politics, you can follow me and look at some sunrises and sunsets and some prairies and bumblebees. You'll enjoy it.
Your photos, gosh, I tell you what. I mean, your photos during the spring and summer last year got me through the spring and summer. They were great. you and I have talked numerous topics over the last year or so, including obviously chronic wasting disease, the disease that's affecting the deer population. You've been a big fighter of that, trying to be as careful as possible. We don't want the deer population, especially not only because of the natural resource that the deer are, but we have a very large hunting contingent in Minnesota that does not want to see the deer population take a big hit here. Looking back on this last year, talk a little bit about that. Talk about the big fight you had with Ingebrigtsen in the Senate about the bills there that were coming through. You had an interesting year.
It's been an interesting year. We made some progress. Obviously, I would have liked to made more, but there is a co-management of the captive deer industry by DNR and the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and the DNR is preparing a report. We also have some bills. Earlier today, I was up at the Capitol working on fine-tuning some legislation, because in the House, we can actually introduce bills today put bills in the hopper today that will be introduced on Monday so that the public can see them. And so we will have a CWD bill that Representative Rob Eklund will be introducing, building upon the success that we had in funding research. We really have leading the nation team at the University of Minnesota with our researchers finding out what's happening, whether it's in water or soil retention or in the animals with the University of Minnesota SIDRAP group.
So, I want to give you commendation on that, because that's one of the things I've really been impressed with you and the state and how they've taken the lead on this, because we've had over the last few decades cases where animal species have been hurt, dramatically wiped out because of issues. You guys are trying to be on the front end of that, and that's just fantastic.
I think, I'm hopeful that we can find some agreement and pass legislation this year. there's going to be a lot of changes at the Capitol. We already see a number of folks that are announcing retirements, and that there's an opportunity, I think, for folks to look at their legacy and hopefully do the right thing, regardless of which side of the aisle they're on or whether they're in the House or the Senate. So we're trying to get these bills out here early, and we're going to have a variety of things, not just with CWD. With the budget surplus that's here, there's the opportunity to right wrongs. There are still some landfill. There's a landfill account that was raided back during the Plenty years, 03 and 05, that was never paid back. It was promised to be paid back. And, you know, landfills are an ongoing kind of sleeping giant in terms of potential groundwater contamination. So looking back at righting past wrongs and then using these dollars, another bill that we were working on today was to provide incentives for the Conservation Reserve Program. Some of these federal programs that are coming, if we can provide a little bit of frosting on the cake for those, that would maybe get some of the voluntary participation into those programs. And then obviously I was on a call, listening to a call while I was driving down with EPA about the federal infrastructure money and wastewater and drinking water. And one of the questions we asked was, can we include solar and efficiency into these wastewater grants that are coming so that we can reduce energy use and have more green technology as this federal infrastructure bill gets implemented? I know that's a mouthful, but I wanted to make sure I got that in, Matt. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think it's what I find to be interesting about the green energy here is, as you are down on this farm here. Now, I should mention your district is it South St. Paul, West St. Paul? It's just south of downtown St. Paul, right?
Yep, South St. Paul, West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, Mendota, and Lilydale. So I have two small towns in the middle of the metro, Mendota and Lilydale, as well as blue-collar towns and white-collar towns together. So I have a great district. I hope it stays the same.
Well, and I should say Mendota and Lilydale are indeed, they are really tiny little towns that are right there on the river in the heart of the city. It's really kind of unique. But you have a farm that's also down in the south in the rural areas. You talked about green technology. One of the things I've been very interested in is I've seen other states that have basically merged the green technology, the green energy bills, and the ag sector, and they've worked well together here. I know we've done some of that here in the state. It's also very, enjoyable when I drive out into the country and you'll see all of a sudden a massive solar farm or a massive wind farm. And it's great. I think that's a great use of the land and a great use of the energy and, clean energy. Who doesn't like that? But we can do a lot more here. I mean, is that obviously one of the things you're kind of looking at is expanding this out on a larger scale?
Yeah, we have a lot of roof space, whether we're in the country or the suburbs or out. As I'm looking here, I see a lot of, on the neighbors, some barns and sheds that aren't used anymore that could be used for solar. And when you go through the small towns and you drive past it's usually a cinder block square concrete building that's the wastewater treatment facility. Got a flat roof. You could put some solar on that as you're upgrading it. And then, when you're in the district, like in Mendota Heights, I've got near the airport a lot of flat top warehouse space that could have solar on it as well. I know there's some churches that have put solar on their roofs. So I think we've got to incorporate that into practical uses that, people can use, whether they're in the farm or in the suburb or in the city.
And just north of your district on the Science Museum parking lot, they've got solar panels. I mean, it's a great use of taking that's unused space and making the most of it. It's not that difficult to do. And really, I think people are kind of surprised when you tell them, oh, well, yeah, you can generate an insane amount of energy with wind power, solar power, if you do it right. And like you say, use all these empty spaces that are just asking to be used for something like solar panels.
Well, and even out here in the country, we've funded some research at University of Minnesota Morris for, like cattle like to be under some shade. So just you put the solar panels on sturdy poles high enough up so the cattle can go underneath them. So you're still getting the pasture, you're getting the cattle shade, and you're getting the solar. I mean, we can be creative. And the question I asked of our friends at EPA was, is there the flexibility for innovation? or do we have to keep doing things the same way all the time? And I think that's where we can, you know, that's, I kind of look at myself as an old FDR Democrat, you know, that you try things in the New Deal, you try things and see what works, you use that innovation and that creativity. And what we want to do is make sure we're using that research and that science to buttress that so that we can apply these programs and apply these projects for regular people throughout the state.
Representative Rick Hansen is joining us. 52A is Democrat of the day. Last year, one of the more comical fights that you had to fight was with the soon-to-be-retired Senator Bill Ingebrigtsen, who was basically trying to force the governor to basically kill green cars, you know, clean car technology, which really the governor, that's actually the, I think it was the Pollution Control Agency is the people that are in charge of that. But because they were so desperate to stop this clean cars that he was willing to put the entire environmental budget on ice and shut down the parks, shut down the DNR. It was really ugly. Finally, he did cave after a fine, I'm guessing a relaxing trip to Alaska for some fishing. But it was kind of one of those things where, I mean, he was determined. These Republicans are really determined to basically try to kill any kind of clean energy policy that gets put out there.
It shows the brinksmanship that they're willing to go to. And if you think about it, let's just look 6 months later. Are you hearing anything about clean cars? Is anybody complaining about clean cars? As a matter of fact, the auto manufacturers and the dealers are now supportive of EVs and clean cars. I mean, so there. Sometimes the fight is intense, and you look back. Here we are, six months later, and it's like, why was there such opposition? And you know, Minnesotans should look for that in the next few months of where are these fights coming from and why do they happen when it's not rank and file? It's usually encouraged by interests that are there, or they want to have that conflict. And I think that, you know, I'm not afraid of conflict, but my gosh, we need to, we here we have such an opportunity with the federal money and this surplus, like I said, where we can right past wrongs, but also plan for the future. And holding things up and threatening to shut down over politics, that brinksmanship, I think, leaves a real sour taste in Minnesotans' mouth.
Well, of course, this is the same Republican Party that has vowed to never move into the Senate office building because, remember, that was a symbol of waste. I'm sure that the Republican senators are no longer, are still not in that Senate office building, that wasn't just about politics or anything like that at all. That's me being sarcastic.
I think they're on the higher floor there too, right? They moved in that top floor where the majority goes.
They're looking for there's some place to put their lobbying grotto too. So you know, it's like, oh, the integrity of the Republicans.
You know, one of the things, Matt, I was at a recent conference and went in the New Mexico Capitol.
Yeah.
And they use the New Mexico Capitol as an art museum.
Wow.
And, you know, if you go in and there's some discussion about, so hopefully, you know, after COVID passes and we can move back, you know, into a future where we get folks coming into the Capitol, into the state office building and the Senate office building. Wouldn't it be great to highlight Minnesota art in those buildings? Right now, they're very sterile. They're very blank. And I got to tell you, with that New Mexico Capitol, it really shows off New Mexico and the talent of their citizens. And we could do that here, you know. I just think we're at this point. It's tough right now. You know, everybody's, like you said, everybody's tired of the last couple of years. But there's such a chance to do things differently and to try to lead that I think we can do that. And, you know, that's something I think that is the Democratic Party's history, and that we've got to be innovative and try things and adapt them for the Minnesota model or create them in Minnesota. So when we get folks back, wouldn't that be great to have those buildings, whichever floor the parties are on, that there's Minnesota art on the walls.
It would be fantastic, and I think that's a magnificent idea. Now, of course, New Mexico's got art school and the history that they've had there. We have some fantastic artists here. It would be a wonderful thing. And, you know, I like the capital like the next guy, but I don't need to see all the governors. There's like we could have like one room with the governors in them, and then we could have room with other artists, including the Native American artists, African American artists. I think it'd be a wonderful showcase idea. Do you think there's any chance you can get someone in the Senate to go along with that?
Well, you got to try. If you don't try, it won't happen. You know, it's that first step, and sometimes it takes one session, sometimes it takes two, and you know, sometimes it becomes somebody else's idea. I find that there's a lot of things that pass as long as you give up ownership of them.
Ah.
It becomes somebody else's idea. So I'm hopeful that, you know, my background is science, you know, and sometimes you need that catalyst to start the reaction. It just starts the reaction and gets it going. And, you know, I think that's what we've got to be doing.
I will congratulate you. And this is a nice little endorsement. The UFCW 1189 Executive Board endorsed you for State House 52A again. A friend of labor, a friend of the UFCW 1189. Nicely done there. I mean, you guys have been working on this. I mean, as we get into this reelection campaign here, there is an opportunity not only for you. I hope we keep you in the Minnesota House. I mean, it's a fantastic, you're a fantastic addition over there. But we do, with the redistricting, we're going to pick up some House seats. I mean, the House seats are going to change because of the metro area population has grown so much. I mean, there's a real opportunity to actually even expand out the majority for the Democrats in the Minnesota House.
And I also think areas like Rochester, Mankato, Duluth, Moorhead, there's some opportunity there for even more members coming in. And I think we have to not be shy. We need to talk about what we believe in. We need to talk about innovation and creativity and working with people and for people. I think that's, again, back to that New Deal philosophy of you've got to make things work. I like working with UFCW. You know, one of the things we worked on was Meatpackers Bill of Rights, the meatpacking workers. And, you know, in 07, we passed a bill. It was really difficult. There was a lot of challenges and mischief trying to get that done. In 15, we have audit of it that said, you know, we need to make sure we're providing information about workers' rights to workers in their own language and to make sure that they are aware of their rights as workers. And we're still not there. Look at what happened during the pandemic and trying to make sure that we're protecting our workers. I think we need to make sure we're working about the workers more than the pigs. Mm-hmm. That means we need to do more. So I'm really honored to have that UFCW endorsement. I know it's early. There's not a lot of endorsements yet, but I see that as, you know, part of years of working on that. And obviously South St. Paul has a long history of labor involvement with meat packing, and I'm pleased to continue that.
Absolutely. In fact, that they've made this endorsement so early tells you to believe in you, and that's for sure. Once again, here's my plea. All right. If you're in a district that's got, you know, a relatively safe district, that's great. Help out your local representative. Help out your local senator. But we need to make sure we hold all these seats here. If you can help out Rick Hansen, hold 52A for the DFL. That'd be fantastic. The website is votehansen.com. Votehansen.com. That is correct, right?
That is, and I'm the Danish variety, so it's an E-N. Vote Hansen with an E.
H-A-N-S-E-N. And, of course, I will also, once again, I highly encourage you, a very enjoyable Twitter feed, Representative Rick Hansen, Rep. Rick Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N. That's where you'll find him. I encourage you to follow him there. Representative, I appreciate the time today. All my best, and hopefully I'm feeling pretty good. We'll see you once again in St. Paul in 2020.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you very much. Representative Rick Hansen, Democrat of the Day, 52A. We'll take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Representative, fantastic representative, and fighting, you know, for the environment, fighting for nature, and it kind of, I think there are times where him and Representative Jamie Beckerfin, who I will get Jamie Beckerfin on here for Democrat of the Day before too long, But there are times where I kind of get to talk to them and they're like, they've just come out of a meeting and like, I don't know where these people are going. If you don't fool yourself for a second. There, if not for Rick Hansen being there, the state of Minnesota would be in a much worse place. We need to have him continue his great leadership in the House, help out 52A, help him keep him there. Now, once again, I know I had someone accuse me just yesterday. Matt, you'll have the Democrats on, but will you have a Republican on? Sure, I will. Oh, I'd love that. No, seriously, I'd love that. Same rules as this. I asked the questions. So, if they want to come on, I mean, as Rick Hansen kind of alluded to there, it's like the election here that's coming up. I mean, hold these people accountable. The disastrous leadership that was running the GOP in the state of Minnesota, the people that still insist that Trump won in 2020, the people that are anti-vaccine, for God's sakes, hang that around their neck and let them deal with that. You want to come on my show? Sure. Guess what we're going to talk about? And trust me, I will scour your social media accounts and figure out exactly what you've said about everything. It will be delightful. So, equal opportunity, you know what I mean? Thank you very much. We'll spotlight Representative Rick Hansen. Hour two of the show, that is coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Matt, Dan, Brett, we're all in here today. Hi, Brett. How are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing well. You do a lot of stuff on your own time. You kind of do camera work for high school sports and stuff like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, basically hauling out a smaller version of a video production truck to these games, essentially, now, yes.
I saw a video production truck, a major one today, over in Hopkins. Now, I'm going to get to this here because I was a little surprised by something, okay? My youngest daughter plays in pep band, all right? And I said, well, yeah, they had a game today at 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock?
3 o'clock?
It's the end of the school term, so it's an off day for the kids. And so, they could, just kind of give something there. But it did seem kind of odd. I said, well, who are they playing? I'm thinking I'm about to hear Wayzata, Minnetonka, maybe even Edina, something like that. No, Dad, this is a nationally televised game versus an ESPN. I think it's like the number 4 girls team in the nation. What? Yeah, they got the ESPN truck and everything out there. They're broadcasting this live, and they are broadcasting. It's like on ESPNU.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the Hopkins girls versus a team out of Washington D.C. You know, the filibusters. I'm gonna guess. The fighting filibusters. Here they come. I have no idea what this school is. It's the number 4 team in the nation versus Hopkins. And I said, wait a second here. So I went and I went up online. Now, I kind of where I'm going to go with this. If Edina had a hockey that was about to get broadcast on ESPN, on any of their networks, a nationally broadcast game, they're going to play one of the other best hockey teams in the state. We would have a week of golden Edina memories. Oh, let's talk about the tradition. Let's talk about this. We'll break down their entire regiment of winning in history. They would. Say Hutchinson football is playing on they're playing a Texas team on a national game for some reason. Mm-hmm. Which I don't know why your high school teams are playing these other things if you want to know the truth. But if you had like Hutchinson out there, the glory, the prestige. There'd be a week of coverage on this. Hopkins girls team, which I'm presuming would mean that they are one of the top 10 teams in the nation.
That I do know they are, yes.
Yeah, what number are they?
I'm not sure, because I'm contracted with Chaska, who beat Hopkins last year. They're probably the two best teams. I know they're both ranked in the top 20 in the nation right now.
Yeah, I'm going to guess Hopkins is top 10 to be on the
Hopkins
national.
Already beat Chaska earlier this year, so they're probably, top 5.
Yeah, they beat them when they were the punches they were throwing. I mean, they're a tough team. My girls, love you. But there's nothing. It's like this is a nationally televised game. And I'm like, there's nothing on ESPN. There's nothing on one of the networks. Nothing on KSTP, which of course is associated. They're on the they're associated with ESPN, with the ABC network. Nothing.
You know what's funny about that? So, so they often cover these games because there's a couple of standout players, college, and ESPN wants
Paige
to broadcast them.
Paige Beckers, of course, came from Hopkins, Aaron.
I don't know if you heard about this from earlier this fall, where ESPN picked up this high school football game involving a team from Ohio, which turned out to be a completely fake
school. It was a Florida school, wasn't it? The Florida school was the complete fake one?
I think the one of them was fake, yeah.
It's like they completely made up their entire resume, and they got plowed over like 100-0. And then the question is, like, how did this game get in here? And they basically, the people that scheduled up the game, believed the team's own press.
I just love a big organization like ESPN couldn't figure that out. Now, I doubt that's the case tonight with Hopkins, unless this team from D.C. ends up being another fake school or something.
Well, no, I have a feeling that it's probably going to be a good game. Well, there, I guess there's four teams in town, I'm guessing, and there's going to be a game today and then games tomorrow. So, yeah, I guess with the NHL not playing too many games lately, I guess.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, they're desperate for things. I mean, I'm just kind of surprised because – like I said, I mean, imagine if Edina Hockey was playing on a national ESPN.
Gosh,
holy God, the Star Tribune would be self-gratifying all over the place. Oh, my God. Well, Aikola. That would be them.
Do you think they would at least give you a small segment as a celebrity Edina guy?
Dear God, no. Do not let that heathen man-child into anywhere near us. Scoot away. Scoot away, you barbarian.
You're a celebrity from Edina. That's got to count.
They hate me.
Okay.
I am not on their Christmas card list. So before we get into your interview here, I'm going to show these off on the camera here. So, now, we've talked about this. I have gone through an old box of memorabilia, and I was looking at the photos. And yesterday, we showed off the beef. You see the beefcake photo?
Yeah.
Is it your screen now on your computer? Is that what you
have not screen capped that. No, we're honorable, Patrick and I and Dan. Yeah, we won't screen cap any of these.
Yeah, there he is. There it is. That's the picture right there. There it is.
Oh, see, I never got the close-up look at that.
It is a disturbing creature, isn't that? That is, you know, what's thicker, my hair on my chest or my head back then? Really?
Yeah, I missed the part. Yeah, you do have a lot of chest hair going on. I saw the top of the head. I'm like,
you think the Sasquatch is merely just a tongue-in-cheek joke? No, that's kind of family right there.
Yeah, that is very Sasquatch, yes.
That's very natural. Oh, Nair, you could do an endorsement deal with me. I'm just letting you know. So I specifically brought two pictures in, and I'm going to show these pictures off here in just a second here. The pictures I brought there, the first one is, and by the way, if you want to watch this, you have to go to the Facebook stream, and I'll post these. I'll probably post these a little bit later on Facebook. I'm not going to post the other one. Maybe I'll show that one again, but I'm not going to post that one, but I'll probably post these two pictures. I'm going to show the first one to show that I did, after I was in Europe for a while, I did normalize myself. I did fix myself. But the other one, you could tell it's just American in Europe, Rick Astley all day long. Look at that.
Yeah.
It is. You're going to have to describe this for the audience.
Yeah. The first one that you have in your left hand now, that I'm assuming you'll put on the screen first. Yeah, you are very Rick Astley going right now. And I had no idea that you had red hair.
I did. Well, I mean, for a while I did.
Yeah.
And then it's like, it literally looks like I was in a bar fight and I cleaned myself up. I mean, American once again.
No, and that second photo, that's starting to look like you. Yeah.
This one?
Yeah. I'm thinking that one you're starting to...
Since they're both me, I would hope I would actually look like them both, you know?
No, I just have a hard time picturing you with red hair. I would not have expected that. Yeah.
Well, I'm an attractive man. I am. There it is. Together forever.
Is this the Rick Astley one
we're putting on?
Take a look
right
at that one. Look at that.
That is just disturbing. How high was my hair? High, tight, and white. That's right there.
Did you put anything in your hair back then?
Something about Mary, I guess, because it's got some height.
Oh, boy.
There you go. And there he is. After my European days, I came back to America and became a normal human being once again.
Yeah, one, I think, I'm starting to see a little bit of how I normally picture you now in that second picture. So hopefully you enjoyed that if you watched Facebook and were able to get those photos.
I'll put them up on the social media a little bit later on. But I will say this.
You know, the thing which is funny is now I understand, like, when I was a kid in the 70s, and I look at a parent who was like, wore a leather jacket and greased their hair in the 50s. And I'm like, loser. You know, now it's like, at least you had you had a classic look then. Mm-hmm. You know, this dweebish British pop look from the late 80s, early 90s. This was not the look you want to be remembered for. It's not like disco or anything. You know, there's some things, some era, some styles. It just doesn't work.
You would have rather have had that photo as a disco guy back, like
no,
late 70s.
No. I'm saying disco wouldn't have worked.
Okay, yeah, I was gonna say,
a psychedelic hippie, drugged out guy. Now that kind of is the thing. British pop, 60s British pop, fine. But dweebish white guys with keyboards playing pop music, that is, hey, Depeche Mode on line one here. I mean, how did I get my hair? How did I have enough hair to get that high?
Let's see that again one more time.
There you go.
Yeah, you put some work into that one, I think, with your hair back in the day.
It's like, can they do this at the State Fair out of butter this year? It's a lot of butter, man. All right, I'll post those up online. As a matter of fact, I'll do that while we listen. You've got, of course, Tori Van Oot from Axios Twin Cities. Which is great to have her working over there right now. I've been enjoying the Axios coverage here. They've just started to expand out their local coverage, and they do cover the Twin Cities locally. You get a chance to chat with her.
Yeah, I know. Normally you speak with her, but I sign up for their newsletter, and they always have good stuff in there. Their daily Axios Twin Cities newsletter, which you can find. Easiest way is just Googling Axios Twin Cities and sign up for it. But yeah, I saw a few stories that caught my interest this week and decided, let's bring Tori on. There's a lot of good stuff going on, including those potential walls rebate checks. We'll talk a little bit about the trial in St. Paul with the other three officers who were involved in the killing of George Floyd, and then we'll touch a little bit too on Chris Ayersman stepping down.
That one hurts.
That one
hurts.
And what's too bad too? I mean, what if we lose her and Jan Malcolm at the same time if the Republicans?
Yeah, they will. That's what they're going to do. And I'm wondering if she's retiring just to get out of the way because she doesn't want to get fired either. And they're looking, as Kurt Dowd says, they're looking to have executions.
Ugh.
And so they're going to get rid of the Health and Human Services Director during a pandemic. Yeah, there you go. All right. So here you go. It's Brett Johnson with Tori Van Oot from Axios Twin Cities right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson back with you here on a Friday afternoon. Well, right now we're joined by Tori Van Oot. She's a Twin Cities reporter for Axios Twin Cities. You can sign up for their daily newsletter, which is a great resource to get a rundown of all of the news of the day in Minnesota. You can find that over at axios.com/twincities. Or if it's just easier for you and you can't remember the URL, you can also just Google Axios Twin Cities, then you'll find a link to make sure you can sign up for that daily newsletter. Hey, Tori, how you doing today? Thanks for joining me on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. And yes, Google is a great, I Google often. I Google my own stories, so that's an easy way to get there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's tough to give those URLs sometimes. So yeah, just do your search engine, then you'll find them that way. Well, we got a number of news stories to talk about today, and let's start off with the big one in Minnesota politics, and that has to do with the potential for having walls checks. If you remember back in the days when we used to have the Jesse checks back in the early 2000s, Governor Tim Walz proposing a similar idea, as about 2.7 million Minnesotans would potentially get checks from the state under a plan from Governor Walz, thanks to, the state having a $7.7 billion budget surplus. So, Tori, tell us a little bit about who could potentially get these checks, how much they're for, and how they're going to be distributed. What information do we have so far?
Well, what the governor is proposing is these rebates, like as you mentioned, as part of the giving the surplus back to Minnesotans. It would be $175 for single tax filers, $350 for married filers. You know, there would be an income cap. It would be about 2.7 million households, and this program would cost about $700 million from this budget surplus. It would be a one-time payment, but the governor's just proposing this, right? So the big picture here is that, as you mentioned, we have a very large surplus right now. The legislature is coming back at the end of the month, and from now until the summer, Governor Walz and legislative leaders in both chambers are going to be jockeying over how to spend the surplus. So this is one of the governor's kind of opening offers here, part of a bigger spending package that he has and he wants to do. And so it's going to be a while, right, before we see whether this happens and what final shape it takes.
And what's been the reaction so far from both DFLers and members of the Republican Party?
Well, you know, Senate Republicans kind of dismissed the governor's announcement here as being an election year gimmick, right? The governor is running for re-election, as are all 200 members of the state legislature who are seeking re-election if they're running again this year. And so, you know, as part of this debate, Republicans really want to focus on, they say, giving back the surplus to Minnesotans in the form of tax cuts instead of a one-time payment. And so that's going to be one of the jobs moving forward. You know, Democrats who have the majority in the House also have a big laundry list of things they would like to spend the surplus on. Just yesterday, House Speaker Melissa Fortman and others were talking about things like investing in paid family leave, you know, more paid sick time for Minnesotans, and kind of using some of this money almost as like a down payment to get those programs up and running. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, rebates, direct payments, as you mentioned, Jesse Ventura did this in the past. You know, they're popular with voters, but there's a lot of negotiating to do in the months ahead, right? Everybody's taking their posturing, their position as the Senate, as the session gets started here. And they'll end up somewhere in the middle at the end. We have a divided legislature.
Yeah, as you said, with the divided legislature, that certainly makes things complicated, but I suppose right. They would rather have the problem yeah. of having a massive budget surplus than a budget deficit. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they... Oh, go ahead.
You'd think that spending a surplus is easier than cutting in deficit year, but I don't know if that's always the case. And, you know, the legislature, they always figure out something to argue about, right? But there's, you know, you're right, the surplus is so big that there is a lot of room for negotiation and compromise because everybody can get maybe a little bit of what they want, not everything. The other complicating factor here is, of course, it's an election year, right? So election year politics are going to play into this a lot as Walz runs again. Several of his potential rivals are serving in the state Senate right now on the Republican side. You've got narrow majorities in both chambers, so the control of the state legislature is also, you know, up for grabs. So it's going to be an interesting couple of months here.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic you brought up because, at least as I remember, the past few gubernatorial elections in Minnesota, we typically didn't have the nominee be someone who is serving in the state legislature. And as you brought up, several of the Republican front runners are currently members of the state legislature, so that certainly adds to some posturing as well and, well, makes it all that much more difficult to distribute that $7.7 billion budget surplus.
Yep. Yes, yes, it does.
So let's talk about another topic, at least in terms of this $7.7 billion budget surplus, because I saw Governor Walz mention this yesterday, and that has to do with trying to pay back part of the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund, which, of course, was depleted during the pandemic, since the state does need to repay the debt to the federal government for covering unemployment benefits. What was Governor Walz saying about this? This does kind of seem like one area where the DFL and the Republicans might come together in terms of trying to repay this fund.
Yeah, I think that we will see an agreement on that front. I don't know if that'll come early or part of later, but essentially the state can help pay this deficit back, plug this hole, and that will prevent tax increases for businesses that would otherwise have to pay more. And so, you know, diverting some of the surplus into repaying this account, so that this automatic tax increase that would otherwise be triggered can be avoided. I think there'll be bipartisan support for that. Republicans have been advocating for this since, you know, late last year, business groups also. And so, you know, with the surplus, I definitely see that being on the table here.
Speaking with Tory,
it's all a question of timing. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The timing so important as well. Yes.
Yeah.
Since the legislature, at least in Minnesota, has not been known for exactly getting their work done on time. On time, I should say. I think I saw some quotes from some DFL later saying they're optimistic that things could get done on time during this session, but that's a lot more challenging. Especially
don't bet on
have,
it.
Yeah, yeah, when we have split party control. Yeah, probably.
Don't going, bet on it, yeah.
Yeah, going right up to the wire, kind of as we see every single year with them. Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about another story, Tori. Again, we are speaking with Tori Vanu, Twin Cities reporter for Axios, and you can sign up for their daily newsletter. Easiest way to do it is just going to your favorite search engine and then typing in Axios Twin Cities. So the Minnesota Department of Health Infectious Disease Director Chris Ehresmann announced yesterday that she is going to be stepping down coming up very soon, which is a significant blow to the MDH, being that she's been there for a long time and had a very prominent role providing those COVID-19 updates, especially back in 2020 during the beginning of the pandemic. What's been the reaction so far to her announcement that she's going to be stepping down, being, again, as I said, she's been such a presence since COVID began here in Minnesota?
Yeah, you know, anyone who's listened to or watched any of the COVID briefings over the last 2+ years would recognize Chris's voice or face, right? She's really a central figure both in kind of strategy of pandemic response and in public communications. And a lot of that reaction that we've heard is praise of that, you know, communication skill she has, right? And the way that she's been able to really like break down all of the different changes in public health guidance. And communicate with Minnesotans kind of being a calming presence in a clear way. And really knowing her, you know, Chris knows her stuff, not unsurprisingly, as the director of this division, often in a call if Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm gets a question a little bit more in the weeds or about numbers or the forecasts and how the in models and how the virus is going, you know, she kicks it to Chris and Chris will know the answer. And so, you know, we've just heard some kind of praise of her contributions on that front. And there will be a national search for a new director after she leaves next month.
And what could kind of throw a wrench into the situation is that, well, Minnesota Senate Republicans have made no secret that they are, well, pretty keen on trying to fire Jan Malcolm, who is the commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Health. So that could leave the Department of Health with two big holes to try to fill if they lose both Chris Ehresmann and also their current commissioner, Jan Malcolm. That could create some challenging scenarios for them.
It could. You know, there aren't at this point as imminent threats, I would say, from Senate Republicans to, for example, you know, bring up Commissioner Malcolm for a confirmation voter hearing like the first week back or anything like that. The new Senate leader, Jeremy Miller, and Malcolm have had some what he's called, you know, constructive conversations since he was elected leader. And so, you know, the way the process works is anytime Senate Republicans could call a confirmation hearing and or vote for the commissioner. And so that will be something that kind of hangs over the session. And it's been kind of a negotiating chip on different issues in the past as well.
All right, one more story I want to highlight right now, and that has to do with the trial that is just beginning right now. It has to do with the three police officers, mm-hmm. besides Derek Chauvin, who were at the scene when George Floyd was killed back in May of 2020, as they are set to stand trial as proceedings just began yesterday. Talk a little bit about the charges they're facing and what we can kind of expect, at least with the timeline of the trial right now.
Yeah, so these are federal civil rights charges that were brought by, you know, the Department of Justice. And it's important to note that a criminal trial, a state criminal trial for these three officers still is going to happen. That's been postponed until June so that this can kind of wrap first. But the charges essentially say, what federal prosecutors say or are arguing, is that these three officers violated George Floyd's rights to be you know, free from unreasonable seizure, and that they kind of displayed an indifference to his medical needs, to his health while he was in custody by failing to intervene and stop Derek Chauvin from kneeling on George Floyd's neck. You know, they've pleaded not guilty. And the trial is going to start with opening statements on Monday. Jury selection has just wrapped this week.
And talking about jury selection, it does appear that it's going to look a little bit different this time as compared to what we saw with the Chauvin trial, if you can explain how that will be different this time.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of main differences. One is that unlike, you know, the criminal trial before for Derek Chauvin, that was in Hennepin County District Court, this is a statewide jury pool. And one thing we saw is that it appears that the jury that was selected is also, you know, so they're not just me. It does appear that the jury is not as diverse as what the jury was for Chauvin's criminal trial, according to some reporters who were, you know, in the room or watching the feed. A third difference is that there's 18 altogether. So they have six alternates because the judge is worried about COVID and Omicron being so transmissible and the levels being so high that they don't want people getting sick and having to sit out to mess up the trial. So it's also a slightly, you know, large jury. And then on the timing, yes, the judge has said, all right, you know, the opening statements are Monday. The judge would like to keep this trial moving along because he's a little bit concerned about COVID disruptions. And, you know, I think maybe 2 weeks is what he said. It took weeks to even seat the jury in the Chauvin criminal trial. And I think they did one day this past week in selecting all the jurors for this federal case. So a little bit different. And another big difference is that unlike the state trial, because this is a federal trial, it's not live streamed. And that was actually pretty rare too, that both the Chauvin trial and the trial of Kimberly Potter, Brooklyn Center officer, were live streamed. That was pretty rare for the state, but this one, you know, it's not televised for the world to see.
Yeah, so it'll certainly be much different than what we saw with the Derek Chauvin trial last year. Mm-hmm. Well, we have been speaking with Tori Vanoot. She is the Twin Cities reporter for Axios Twin Cities, and you can sign up for their daily newsletter to give you a good rundown of what's happening in Minnesota news and politics. Easiest way to do it is just searching and your favorite search engine, Axios Twin Cities. Again, that's Axios Twin Cities, or if you want the websites, it is axios.com/local/twin-cities, but I just go that search engine style. Hey, Tori.
Certain.
Yeah, most certainly. Yeah. I don't have that good of a memory to remember the whole URL, so yes, just make sure you search Axios Twin Cities. Hey, Tori, really appreciate the time today. I know you're usually a guest on the Matt McNeil Show, so appreciate you taking some time to chat with me today.
Oh, thanks. Anytime. Always happy to chat the news.
All right, and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, on that Hopkins game, they're playing someone, Narissa Bach, messaged me on the Facebook feeds, playing Sidwell Friends School now. That's the school that the Obama girls graduated from. And apparently they have I was told that they are the number 4 team in the nation. So obviously they've got a pretty good basketball program. Interesting to see how those games come on out. But I was just kind of surprised that You have a high school team playing on a national stage, and no one in town seems to think that that's worthy. But like I said, if it was Edina in hockey or one of the big football programs, oh, it'd be week-long coverage on that. I did post, by the way, too, the photos. That is a weird photo of me. These are old photos. The one where I look like Rick Astley, I'm going to guess is 1990, and the one where I look like I'm about to get pulled over by a police officer, that one I'm going to guess is 1993, 94, maybe 93. I'll put 93. It does look like I look like I was in Europe in the first one, and then the second one looks like, oh, back in America, finally growing a beard and looking scruffy. There you go, America. 952-946-6205. Following up on a story from yesterday, Governor Tim Walz and Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan both now have called on Hennepin County Sheriff Dave Hutchinson to resign following Thursday's release of investigative data from his December 8th DWI crash. "It's not our role to hire or fire the sheriff of Hennepin County," said the St. Louis Park resident Flanagan Thursday afternoon, while flanked by the governor. "But as a constituent, I would say that it's time for him to resign." I would agree, since I also live in Hennepin County. The Minnesota Department of Public Safety released hundreds of files from the investigations earlier this morning, including documents, images, video, and audio. They show Hutchinson, who had pleaded guilty to misdemeanor DWI, was going 125 miles just before he crashed the county-owned vehicle on I-94 in Alexandria around 2:30 in the morning last month. Records also indicate he insisted on law enforcement at the scene that he wasn't driving, trying to blame the wreck on a cab driver. He claimed to be behind the wheel. Investigators found three guns at the scene and open containers of alcohol in the SUV. Witnesses say they saw him crawling away from the crashed vehicle. Walz cited the position of responsibility Hutchinson, as the top enforcement officer in the state's largest county, is in, and described the incident as a breach of trust. "I think most Minnesotans know that most Minnesotans understand that there's consequences for decisions like that," who endorsed Hutchinson during his 2018 run for sheriff. Walz and Flanagan both expressed relief nobody was hurt in the single vehicle rollover. Well, I mean, Hutchinson was hurt, but I mean, they're grateful that no one else, and he's lucky that no one else was there. Flanagan also reiterated his stance, saying it was time for him to step down. I yesterday made the comment that the, I think that Hutch should step down. I know him. I've had him on the show. Very nice guy. Very friendly with him. But there's sometimes you do get a little bit of a problem. I guess you could say beyond kind of forgiveness on this level. Now, once again, I want to make sure I'm clear here. He says he has alcohol issues. He says he has mental health issues. And by all means, I mean, I will support you in the day until my dying day on your need to get help on that. If there's anything I can do to help you on either of those, by all means, I'd be more than happy to help. But it goes beyond just the drinking. It goes to the fact that you were in the official vehicle, you were driving 125 miles an hour. How you didn't kill someone, I don't know. And then one of the things that should be mentioned is his blood alcohol level was near double what it should have been, but that was a test that was hours after the accident. I mean, they broke down the timeline yesterday, and I don't think that they did the urine test on him until like 5 in the morning. And yeah, he trying to go out and get more drinks, calling the Alexander Cab Company, saying which bars are open. Clearly, he's got a problem. But, I mean, it's clear that he needs to step aside and go figure this out. And that's just and I'm not the only one. The governor and the lieutenant governor as well think that this is, you know, all our best in dealing with your alcohol problems. I've said this yesterday. I've had a lot of friends who have dealt with alcohol issues, some of them very successfully. I'm very proud of them. Some of them, they've not made it. And it's a very serious problem. Mental health issues used to be much more of a stigma. You know, there's a lot of places, a lot of opportunities for help. And if you've got mental health issues, go get the help. But you probably can't be the Hennepin County Sheriff if you want to do this. Now, there's another reason I am bringing this up. There has been on social media a few different people, conservatives. One or two of them try to play that they're neutral. They're trying to both sides. I criticize both. They're really conservative. Who are trying to make the point that after we saw what actually happened with Sheriff Hutchinson, it's a crime. Someone said we should investigate the journalist that was given access to his car. This is just, that's just a dog and pony show. You should only be focusing on Hutch. That's kind of the mentality. That basically people, and I want to go back in time in case you missed the story. And I actually had to bring the story up right before the New Year's break. And then I brought it up again after New Year's. And I'm reading from a story here in the Minnesota Reformer. This story was on the 4th of January. And it was the Rebecca Brannon, who is the journalist who basically uncovered all the shenanigans going on within the Minnesota GOP. She basically, and I'm going to read the quote exactly, that where is it? Forgive me as I shuffle through the briefs here. The basically Brannon, she was able to get there, you know, get access to the car. She found out where the car was. The police went to investigate this, and Rebecca Brannon was able to, she pulls into, we got coverage of this, she pulls into the Medina lot where this is at, drives directly to the car, is it, now she's not a cop, she's a journalist, was able to open the car door, take photos of the car, of the stuff that was in the car, she moved some stuff around, and by her own admission, and then left. And she had said that part of the police was that the, you know, where she got the information about this was that she got, you know, help from police officers. She got hints about this from police officers. And so it's kind of an interesting argument that they're trying to make here that this is not something that's important, because now I'm going to be very clear here. I don't think Rebecca Brannon did anything wrong. She's a, well, to a point she did one thing wrong, but I'll get to that in a second. She's a journalist. You get a call from a cop that says, hey, do you want to get access to Hutchins' mangled SUV? We'll get it out there. We'll show you where it is. And, you know, it doesn't sound like it was only police officers that gave her access, but that gave her the clues. That it wasn't just them, but at the same time, it does sound like some police officers were involved in helping Brannon, giving her the information. Here it is. Brannon later admitted to McKinley that she took the photos after being tipped off to the whereabouts by several sources, including some in law enforcement. So this is the journalist telling officially, yes, law enforcement, police officers, sheriff's deputies, whomever, did tell her where this vehicle is at. Now, she doesn't sound like she broke the law when she went in there, but she did do one thing that was a little bit unfortunate. She did admit she moved some items around to take photos. Now, she's saying, you know, the Hutchinson attorney is accusing her of staging. She's saying, I didn't stage anything, but then you move things around in the car. Well, that's staging. And you know what? You might not have staged it as in like a body on Gettysburg in the Civil War, where photographers were criticized for taking corpses from the field and posing them in specific ways to take photos of them. You didn't do anything like that. But the mere fact you moved anything in that car, technically you staged a shot. And it might have been just to get something out of the way so you get a better shot, but you moved something. And so technically the car, even if there was other things here that there are other crimes that could be, you know, delved into via the car. The car is garbage now. You can't use the car in any capacity because a journalist has access to it. The thing which is interesting, and I'm going to talk about this, part of the photo she took photos of a nicotine salt vaping device and what she called weed gummies that were hemp-based gummies posted on the photos on Twitter. Now, here's where the problem comes in. The officer that investigated Hutch's vehicle, guy's name Eischens, E-I-S-C-H-E-N-S. He was asked if he saw the items from Brannon photographed and posted on social media, and Eischens said he didn't. But he also said he wasn't looking for them either. But then he comes back and he says this. Eischens told Nelson if he'd seen anything impairment-related, he would have photographed it. So the implication, and the strong implication, is the weed gummies weren't there when he investigated the vehicle, but yet were there when Brannon was there. And once again, I don't think Rebecca Brannon, although she had, you know, she admitted to moving some things around to take photographs, I don't think she brought in the weed gummies. Which leads to this question. Did the police officers who tipped off Brannon actually stage the car with planted evidence to try to make Hutch look bad? And the real question you should ask yourself is, And by the way, what I've just said there is not in any capacity a stretch, a reach, anything out of things. You have Aishin saying the gummy worms weren't there. He didn't see him. If he would have seen him, he would have been there. She is saying she moved one or two things around, but it's not like she turned the vehicle over. Henceforth saying that Aishin's, what she did, she's implying she opened the car door, the weed gummies were there, and the other stuff was there. Well, Aishin's didn't see that. So someone clearly put those in the vehicle to make Hutch look bad. If these police officers are willing to do that, if that's indeed what did happen, these police officers are willing to do this with another officer, let me ask you something. You think that that's something they wouldn't have done with other suspect vehicles? Please. Absolutely, there has to be an investigation into this. Investigate Hutch. Condemn Hutch. I think we were very clear. I've asked for Hutch to resign. I think he should resign. He deserves the condemnation. He should get it. But this implication that you can't look at what happened with Rebecca Brannon and what was in the car that wasn't in the car when Aishin's was looking at it is pretty ludicrous, especially when Brannon herself admits that police officers keyed her off to where the car was. And if you have to say to yourself, and I think the reason why Republicans and conservatives are screaming, ignore this element of the story. And if I had to take a guess, pure speculation, my guess would be that someone who is either declared to run for Hennepin County Sheriff or plans to run for Hennepin County Sheriff was involved in this. And if it comes on out that that candidate, and this is someone that, because reminder, this is all politics. I mean, Hutch is believed to be much more liberal, you know, and he's not the Republican. They want a much harder sheriff, someone that's going to go up and be rough and aggressive and, you know, militarize the sheriff's department. That's what they want. And Hutch is not that kind of guy. So they're going after him. But if that rough, tough, militarized the sheriff's department candidate was the one who tipped off Brannon and possibly planted evidence in the vehicle, well, it's not going to, I mean, you can sit there and say that's not important, but it is pretty important. It is pretty important. And yeah. So what I think is going on is I think that you see conservatives who might know who did this, who want that person to become the Hennepin County Sheriff, trying to scream down anyone that wants to ask the question about the access to the vehicle, exactly the hemp gummies got in there and all that stuff, the staging of that vehicle before Rebecca Brannon got in there, the stuff that was in there when was not in there when Aishin's did his report on the vehicle. Because I think they realize that this might doom their candidate. And if it ever does come on out, if there ever is an investigation, if there is something here that does basically show that, oh, you know, this officer did plant this stuff, especially if that officer is someone who's running for Hennepin County Sheriff, well, that's going to negate, they're not going to have any chance at all. Do you think anyone in Hennepin County is going to want to have a sheriff who basically goes on out there and stages crime scenes? My God, can you trust him with any vehicle? Of course not. So, like I said, one, you can investigate both crimes. It's not an either-or situation. You're trying to make it sound like it's an either-or situation. It's not an either-or situation. But as well, there's a real good reason you need to investigate how exactly the weed gummies got in that vehicle. Because if the police officer that tipped off Brannon, the police officer who's running for Hennepin County Sheriff, don't you think the public should know if the candidate was behind planting evidence in a vehicle to try to make the guy he wants to replace look worse than he already does? Now, I'm going to make the comment, I'm asking for Hutch to resign, ignoring all this stuff. And that's the part which makes the officers that were behind the Brannon thing really stupid. You didn't have to do a damn thing to make Hutch look bad. He looked bad by his own actions. This was trying to put cherries on tops of sundaes here. And the reality is you might have opened the door for you to get prosecuted. So stop with this fake argument, because the more you scream that no one should look at what exactly happened to that vehicle and how the weed gummies got in there, the more I'm starting to wonder if the person who is really responsible is either A, an established candidate to be Hennepin County Sheriff, or someone who's planning on trying to run. Because it sure sounds like someone was involved that really had a motivation on this. And the fact that the Republicans are screaming, don't pay any attention to the wizard behind the curtain. My experience in covering politics tells me that something else is going on. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take the commercial break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. And by the way, once again, I want to make very clear here. You go back to the reformer story from January 4th, and here are the facts from this story. That Brannon said, he admitted that she took photos of after being tipped off to the whereabouts of Hutch's vehicle by several sources, including some in law enforcement. So the journalist is acknowledging some people in law enforcement told her where to find the car. So, once again, Eichens, the officer who investigated this, who took all the photos and searched the vehicle himself, and was asked if he saw the items Brannon photographed and posted on social media. He said he didn't see them. But he also, I did add, if he'd seen anything impairment related, he would have photographed it. Okay? So he's basically saying the weed gummies, they weren't there. He is saying, this is a police officer saying, when he searched the vehicle, those weren't there. I do not think Brannon planted any evidence. I do not think so. Although I will say this, if there's any chance, if you thought there's any chance in the world you're ever going to introduce that vehicle into any court case in the future, you're an absolute fool. So, because the first thing the court's going to say is, what do you mean that law enforcement told a reporter where it is she was able to get access to the vehicle and photograph things? And by her own admission, and once again, let me say this, she admitted she moved some item around to take some photos. Now, I do not think that means, and once again, I am backing up Rebecca Brannon to a point. Like I said, I think moving stuff in the vehicle, that was a bad idea. I understand you might have done it for photographic purposes, but the minute you moved anything in that vehicle, you technically were moving things in the vehicle. And that's the end of that. But I don't think Rebecca Brannon did anything wrong when she follows up on a lead. She's a journalist. That's what journalists do. Two, I don't think she planted any evidence in there. I don't. I think she might have moved some things around to get better photos of things, but I don't think she did. So, where did the weed gummies come from? Once again, what's your first clue? Well, law enforcement tipped her off. And think about this. Think about what the implications of this story are. That there might be people in law enforcement who are themselves or welcoming other non-law enforcement people into impound lots, into holding facilities, giving them access to vehicles which are currently under investigation and possibly planting evidence in them. Damn right you have to search this. You have to track this case down. Now, I'm not about, I would say basically you've got video cameras on these facilities. If there's a police officer who is, I don't know, not from Medina, who all of a sudden rolled up into the Medina holding area and parked their car over by Hutch's vehicle, that might be my first clue on who to start questioning. I don't necessarily think you shake down Rebecca Brannon or put her in jail until she gives up her sources, but I don't think this is necessarily the crime of the century that you'll never figure this out. I think it's going to be fairly easy to figure out. And yes, I think those officers, anyone in law enforcement that did was part of this, should be dragged into court, because the credibility of all law enforcement in the county of Hennepin, whether that's local police departments or the sheriff, is now under question, because you've got evidence that seems to have been planted in a vehicle that people got there and got that information. Oh, okay, there we go. Rick Astley, I forgot to even get to this. Rick Astley, going to take us to the end of the show. You have a wonderful rest of the weekend. Until Monday. See ya. We're no strangers.